Welcome to Season 5 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 101, Ovation. And today we are joined by Kirsten Lund, owner of Looking Glass Workshop, as well as the designer of this Spotlight game. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm so excited to have you on, especially since we've kind of like known each other for years, and this has been a very long process. I'm so excited for this to be a part of this episode.
Me too. It's been, when you say years, truly, it was years ago that you first played Ovation and were encouraging and supportive. So how far we have come.
Oh my God, for real. For anyone who doesn't know you, how did you first start getting into like designing board games?
Well, it was Ovation, actually, that was my inspiration. And it was because my son, Riley, and I was homeschooling him. We were living in Colorado at the time, and we were going to go to the Denver Symphony. And I always look for a game to enhance our learning. That was just, you know, standard for a board game nerd mom. So I looked for a board game that we could play to enhance our learning on classical music, and I didn't find one at the time. Some have come out since. And I've watched them come out and been worried that, oh, goodness, are we overlapping? But we haven't. And so I wanted to create something. I said, there should be something in the world. So really, that was the beginning, was wanting to get this classical music themed game out into the world. Then COVID hit and there a lot of stuff went online. And the silver lining of COVID was definitely, I mean, if you had to have some good things come of something so terrible. One of them is those connections online with a wonderful, wonderful community of designers and creatives who are supportive and kind and talented and also trying to get their work realized. And so that process really made it my home, made design a home and a comfortable space, was meeting so many people from all over the world. And that includes you. That's how we met. So
that is how we met.
Yeah. That's how I got really into it.
Yeah. It's so interesting because like earlier today, I was on a different person's podcast and talking about how also COVID actually helped me too, because it did create those connections and also allowed me to design quicker because I was doing everything digitally. I was no longer like cutting and pasting and like making all these physical prototypes and then tossing them after each iteration when I could just upload a new one onto whatever program I was using.
Yeah, iterating digitally is so much faster. I totally agree.
Yeah, and I mean, I still think you definitely need to do it in person, but for that beginner, like the beginning parts of it, oh my God, is it so nice when you can move fastly by doing the digital stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. There are some games that you can't do well digitally, but like Dexterity and some party games are definitely not as strong, but some can be really great too digitally. But I totally concur that you have to do it live. That's the nothing replaces that. But goodness, the iteration is so much faster. And so that's when I got bit by the bug, is because, oh, I could do this quickly. And oh, for a long time, it was just Ovation. But then, you know, eventually the bug starts, you get the ideas and you start writing them down and you start going, well, I want to work on that one. And so, so then you're able to create multiple at once so easily that, yeah, it keeps you going.
Yeah, it does. Well, for anyone who hasn't played Ovation, would you mind explaining the gameplay for it?
So Ovation is an engine building game, and that's really its pure core. You are the composer, so you get to be one of the great composers of the classical era of music. And there is a player board that you use that you track your inspiration, because inspiration is the main resource of the game. It comes in three types: joy, passion, and sorrow. And you use that for everything. So you use that to acquire fortune cards that are going to go under your board and allow you to use one of four actions on your turn. You get to pick one of four each turn. And so those cards under your board are going to make those actions more efficient and allow you to build combinations. And then you can get patrons who are going to enhance your scoring and also help you a little bit with that engine building. And that's from cards in a central market. And then the big thing is you use that inspiration to perform great works of music. And then my favorite part is when you perform your great work of music, your neighbors can attend your performance to get inspired by the tone of the music that you're playing. So if you're playing a joyful piece of music, your neighbors get joy. So by attending your performance. And so everybody's competing and you're getting points for all of that. It's points at the end, and whoever has the most legacy points at the end wins.
Yeah, my friends and I, when we were playing it, were very much like, yeah, I'm going to attend this concert. Yeah, I'm going to attend this. And then eventually I was the only one attending because everyone else was like, wait a second, I'm giving you potential points or inspiration. I lost. So I think I did help them win. I'm like, I'm the only one who technically has played this years ago, but like, oopsies.
I'm with you. I attend all the time, partly because it's just fun. I have the most fun with that part. And I enjoy watching players engage in that because either they're applauding each other or sometimes they're trash talking. it's just so much fun to watch. So I always attend.
I kept using like the different inspiration names and my friend was like, no, it's fire. You're making a fire performance. And I was like, all right, Avatar the Last Airbender. This is fire performance.
Yeah, that was the dual coding for being colorblind friendly, which is a really important part. Accessibility is really important to me. So that dual coding of the symbols I felt was really fitting. So I don't mind at all if people say fire or flower or teardrop for passion and joy and sorrow. But it's still the vibe. I hope it's still the vibe. Like that fire is still passionate, right?
I definitely, yeah, mine was a lot of fire, so like, I guess very passionate in my performances during that game, which I did not win, so I don't know what that's saying.
Which composer were you?
I, of course, went for the woman. I was like, ooh, this one.
Oh, Mariana Martinez? Yeah, and that was what was so exciting to me. It was Heather Newton, who runs the Protospiel Online, who said to me, you've got a lot of old dead white dudes here, and I was like, yeah, but that's kind of the big four. I don't know what to do about that. And she's like, sometimes it's harder to find the other stories, because I was like, I can't even think of a woman from the classical era. And so I had to do homework because she's definitely not one of the ones that gets the publicity or anything. But I found her and she's fascinating. She was a compatriot of Mozart and was the only woman to compose a symphony in that era. So in Western music. So yeah, I was really pleased to find her and I felt the same way. And that's really gratifying because once in a playtest, I was told, no one's going to want to play these unknown names.
Oh, no, I immediately went for the girl and I was like, if someone's going to take that, then I was going to go for the not white guy. Which, yeah, I don't know what that says about me, but...
Oh, it says we love and champion diversity.
Sure, that's what it is, yep.
I'm so glad Heather encouraged me to do that because I found him too, Joseph Bologne. And there's a film that came out about him recently. His story is fascinating too. That he was a black composer in that same era.
I'll have to give that one a shot. I love those kinds of movies.
Yeah, it's called Chevalier. I think I watched it on a plane. But it's really good. I don't know if it does justice to his story, because his story, I mean, I'm biased because I did so much research and studying, and his story is so fascinating. But it is a lovely movie, and of course, fantastic music.
Cool. Yeah, I noticed that at the back of the boards, you had information on each of the people. I did not end up reading it due to the fact that I was running multiple games in one night, but I will give it a read after this recording.
Yeah, there wasn't intended to be a homework assignment. It's just there for if you're interested, and certainly for that initial homeschooling inspiration, so that there's info out there. I did get a lovely email from one of the Kickstarter backers who said he and his mom and his grandmother were playing together, and that they had a delightful time and were reading the facts and learning about them, which I thought was really cool. I mean, he said next time they'll put the music on.
Oh, that's so cute.
It was a really charming email. Yeah. And that they had a really good laugh when the grandma at the end said, why did I get that guy? He doesn't even like my music. Because she had got one of the patrons who didn't care for her music at all and didn't give her points. Yeah. So that was a kick.
So what made you decide to go with those mechanics for this theme? Because, I mean, you mentioned your inspiration, but, like, why specifically engine building?
Well, the first thought I had, the one that made me go, oh, I think this could turn into a game, was the patronage system in that era where the musicians were really limited. They had some tension in what they could accomplish because they had to work for the patrons and schmooze the patrons and
starving artist vibes.
Yeah. And I do love engine building, but I thought that tension of trying to do something and not being able to yet and then getting better and better and more notoriety, you have a little more clout and power and you can do things. It felt like that was the right sort of style for that feeling of the starving artist. Sometimes people will say, well, why do I have to do the action before I can fire off the abilities? And I say, well, that's because that's the gig when you're a musician and a composer in that time. You had to do what they wanted you to do first. You couldn't just create willy-nilly. You had to go schmooze the patron or you had to go do some kind of work, right? Teaching someone's kiddo or writing a commission piece or something like that before you could create what you wanted to create. So I was hoping that feeling would be carried through.
I definitely agree. I mean, I'm an artist. I've watched my dad. I keep telling him he needs a sellout some days because, like, he writes screenplays. I'm like, you write too smart. Like, you just need to sell out once or twice or give it to me. I'll rewrite it and we'll say it's both of us because, yeah. But you know what? I'm glad that these artists got to that point where they're in your game.
Yeah, me too. And it's been delightful to hear people listening, that people are saying they're listening to the music and particularly with Joseph Ballone and Mariana Martinez, that they're discovering them because I was thrilled to discover them myself. So sharing that with others has been quite special.
Were there any other kinds of, like, changes or suggestions that came from playtesting that, like, drastically changed your game or, like, made it better?
Oh, absolutely. The originally it had much less of the build. There was a very big iteration after I went to PAX Unplugged in 2019, right before the world went mad. And so that was when inspiration had been split. I had money changing hands as well. So there were two types of resource. And it was actually Eric from Talon Strikes who said, I think you're missing an opportunity here with the inspiration and how music feels. And I was like, oh, that is really exciting. So it had a huge iteration at that point. It was really funny because my husband and son were very big supporters and they still are, but they were like, why are people telling you to change your game? Your game's great. And I said, okay, wait, do you trust me? And they said, well, yes. And I said, I think this is exciting and I want to pursue it. And they went, okay, you know, like, grudgingly. And they agreed that it was absolutely the right direction to take it. So that particular note of, I think you're missing something with the inspiration was huge. I thank Eric profusely for that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm trying to imagine, like, how did money exchange as a secondary currency?
Yeah, it was a very different game.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. Just from my brain, I'm like, where does that fit?
It shouldn't have. So it became what it was meant to be. Yeah.
And then through playtesting, you also have these, like, end game scoring conditions. I forget what they were called.
Oh, the Maestro cards. Yeah.
Yeah, the Maestro cards. At what point did you have those in the game?
I had those in the game. I think that came with the new iteration. And I had toyed with them in a few different ways. I had them sort of as end game scoring, like secret goals, individual. At that point, the timing of the end game, it was too much of a race because I used mechanisms that you see in other games, like a number of performances, like a certain number of those cards achieved or a certain score total of those cards achieved. And that was turning it into a race rather than allowing people to build an engine and fire it off before it ended. So yeah, it was in relatively early on after the new iteration. So it definitely came in the new iteration. There are some things that have gone out that I hope to get back, but that one was one that definitely found its way to the right spot by being the end game condition. Instead, I didn't mention that when we talked about how it plays, but that is the end game condition, is when a number of those goals are collected that equal the number of players, then the game ends. And it was tricky to time that right and make the goals so that everyone has a chance to satisfactorily fire off that engine at least once, maybe twice, before it wraps up. Because any longer and it's too much lag time between turns. So it has felt, for me anyway, it felt like it finally found its zen, where it was just the right point of the end game condition.
Finding an ending condition is just like so hard, because you can find the fun, you can find the mechanics, but sometimes, especially I've been on a co-op kick, I've just been making so many cooperative games, finding endings for them is the most annoying thing ever, because mostly it's like, I don't care. Like, how do you scale it, make it harder or easier or whatever? Like, I don't know. I need to stop, but I keep doing it.
I haven't designed a co-op yet, but I really, really, well, no, that's not true. I have the co-op word builder, but that one's got specific, each quest, it's sort of, Jonathan Schaffer describes it as letter jam mashed up with the crew, because it's cards, and it's a cooperative word building game that I've designed with Bez's L deck, and it's 50 quests. So the quests are kind of succinct, so there is an end, but I haven't done a full, like, this is the co-op game experience, which I still want to do.
You got time.
Yep. Well, I've got years of life, I suppose, but that list just gets longer and longer of what you want to design, right? And the ideas that pop up.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. That's not going to get smaller. That's going to get longer.
Yeah, whenever people are hesitant about sharing, especially digitally, since, you know, digital files are there, they're hesitant about sharing their games with the community because they're new, because they might get stolen. It's like, no, you don't understand. We all have lists that are so long of our own that we haven't gotten to yet.
Oh my God, yeah. I post constant pictures of every game that I'm working on. And I'm like, you know what? You try to steal this, good luck if you can figure it out from just looking at it, first off. But also, second off, I have so many pictures as proof that you stole it, like, and that I had it at this date or whatever. And, like, thankfully, the community is pretty good where if someone gets caught, like, they get kicked out. Like, they're not coming back.
Yeah. The one time, it was so wild that I had said that to someone, and that very week, I think it happened to a friend with a pretty big Kickstarter, and the entire community rose up. It was quick and it was final. There was no question that the community is prepared. It's better to share because the community is prepared to protect each other.
Yeah, which is good. I like that. So at what point did you decide, like, hey, this game, I want to make it myself. I want to start up Looking Glass Workshop.
Well, that's an interesting question, because want is a strong word. I was pitching it, and what I was finding largely was that in large cases, it was wanting to retheme it, which I would do with so many games that I've created since. I would be very happy to, but as I said, that was so much of the impetus for this game, the inspiration, the...
Yeah, it got you into it. It was your baby.
Yeah, it's the reason I wanted it to exist. So, and I do feel gratified now that people are, like I said, saying they've discovered these composers and their music. So I feel justified, but I understood that at the time, much bigger publishers, they have a lot more that they invest, and people whose jobs are dependent on the success of those games, and didn't have a market they felt was an automatic purchase for a classical music game. So I totally got it, but I just didn't, it wasn't comfortable for me to change this one. And so because I was so adamant that I really wanted it to exist the way it is, and because of, like I said, that community of really supportive creatives that are here online, and the Protospiel online community, the Building the Game community, the Break My Game community, there's so many supportive creatives who believed in it. And then, you know, my husband being so supportive of us trying to see if it could happen, that I thought, well, I believe in it. And I think there is a market. It may not be what a publisher already has out there. So yeah, then it was a lot of soul searching and budgeting and figuring out how, and then a lot of reliance on wonderful mentors and people in the industry who are very kind and generous with their advice, like Eric at Talent Strikes, and like Shem with Garfield Games, and people who have the experience and the knowledge and are willing to share it. This industry really does believe and acts like it acts in accordance with that belief that a rising tide raises all boats. So the support of each other is there. The willingness to answer questions and make referrals and all of that good stuff is there. Carla Weir Giraffe was hugely helpful in the beginning with her time and her expertise. So that was also key, was learning that other publishers, successful publishers, are so generous with their time and expertise. And so then it was, I can do this. And I created it as a, I took the advice to create it as if it were going to continue, even if it was just a one and done. Create it with that in mind so you don't have to redo any steps for the next one. Hopefully there will be a next one. That's still the plan.
That's awesome. And what made you decide on Looking Glass Workshop?
Okay, so years ago, I was in the theater, and some friends and I were going to create a group, and we wanted something that was reflective of playfulness and something that was reflecting of Shakespeare's advice to the players, which is hold the mirror up to nature, so reflect the world. And I came up with the name for the theater troupe, which was Looking Glass Players. And then one of our members got accepted to Harvard's American Repertory Theater program. And he said, what do I do? And we said, you go to Harvard. That's what
you said. Yeah. So, like, what are you asking?
Right. So it disbanded for the best of all possible reasons. But that concept stayed with me. And then when I was thinking about names, I feel the same way about the games, in that I want them to be playful and fun. But I also wanted them to reflect us as humans and our stories and things we can learn from and about each other, and experiences that we can have and enhance as humans. So I went, I think this is the right name. And then I picked workshop because I didn't want to say games, because I want to be open to other possible creative avenues with those inspirations in mind.
So I already knew that answer since I helped you on your logo, but I thought it was a cool story, so I wanted you to repeat it. And so how did you end up getting connected with Grand Gamers Guild? That part of the story I don't know.
Oh, yeah. That was actually Jonathan Chaffer, who I mentioned.
Yeah, Holiday Hijinks. He was also on my podcast. And I just saw him actually three days ago at Grand Con. We didn't take a picture, though. I was so mad. I forgot to take one with him. I was like, damn it.
I saw you with one with Jason. And there are some of the gang that I know in that group, the Discord server, that I don't know. I wouldn't know their faces. I don't know if I've been as jealous of a con, even Gen Con, as I was seeing your pictures. I was like, oh man, I could hug you, and I could hug John, and I could hug Jason, and I could hug all these people.
Like, damn it, Grand Con, 10th anniversary, all the hugs, duh.
So yeah, it was Jonathan, actually, who put me in touch with Mark. And it was funny because there were two things that happened with Jonathan almost at the same time. One of them, I talked to him about the Holiday Hijinks game, so I'm lucky enough to get to be working on one. I'll just say that. So I was talking to him about that, and then he had talked to Mark and said that it seemed like it would be a fit for Mark if I was willing to talk to Mark. And I was like, sure. And so we had a conversation, but I had started the Kickstarter at that point. I did not have a retail plan outside of New Zealand at all when I launched. And Mark, well, you know, is wonderful.
He's a very nice dude.
Yeah, yeah. And he was really supportive, and I got him sent a copy, and he believed in it. And so we partnered up so that he can distribute in North America for me and with me as partners. And he's just been wonderful. That's another person that I will ask a ton of questions of as an experienced and talented publisher, and say, okay, what do I do here?
He's great. Yeah, he's been so helpful. I've heard, like, from two other designers that are starting up their own publishing companies that they're, like, doing print runs with him so it can be cheaper, and, like, he's helping. And I was just like, it really just takes these kinds of people doing, like, this is not a little thing he's doing. He's doing bigger things. But even just the small things, if everyone just did a little bit of small things, it'd be a much better life and a much better community. And just, I see it getting better and better, but it's so cool to hear these stories.
Yeah, it's been marvelous. He's been just, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to Jonathan for connecting us, and to Mark for believing in Novation and me. And like I said, Shem Phillips he's so prolific. They do such amazing games. And the first time I went to a game design retreat here in New Zealand, I was very intimidated. He was there, and Bobby Hill was there, and Bobby's Hadrian's Wall had been on the hotness list on Board Game Geek for weeks at that point. And I was so nervous. And they were both, they couldn't be nicer. They couldn't be more helpful. And Shem, you send him a list of questions. You know, sometimes if you send someone an email with a lot of questions, they'll answer some of them and not the rest. Shem will answer every single question. in detail. And it's just, I don't know, he's just so supportive and amazing. So, yeah, and Bobby too. Bobby down to the point where he 3D printed my tokens for the first prototype of Ovation. And then most recently, he chuckled at me at the last scans because I had cheap little cards as my card backs for prototypes. And he said, why don't you just use Magic cards? And I said, well, I don't have a board game store in my area. And he's like, oh, let me get you some Magic cards. So he sends me a box of Magic cards that I now can use. I mean, just to the littlest thing. They're just so supportive and amazing. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. And so how long do you think it went from that initial inspiration to having the game out for people to play?
Riley's my son. That was the inspiration. Riley and I decided it's 7 years, which is probably the longer version of this that anyone should do, but it was worth it. I mean, it was my first game, so it was a lot of kinks to be worked out, and I really wanted it to be quality and not just my first go and throw it out there and see what happens. But some people can do their first draft and it's brilliant, but that wasn't me. I needed to put a lot of work into it. And then just all of the development of it and learning what to do as a publisher and art direction, which some folks question my choices. I've seen some people say this looks like a kid game or something lighter, but I really wanted to bust through the notion that classical music is stuffy,
yeah,
or dry, or, you know, I didn't want sepia tone all beige, you know. I wanted something that said fun, you know. And so that's the direction I went. I love it. And it's got diversity right on the cover. So that was the other thing I think that was big about doing it myself, is that I could choose to make sure that I'm being what I want to see in the industry. So I want to see diversity on the cover. I have a diverse design team, you know, artistic team. Both of the artists are women. You're wonderful and did my logo. One of the graphic artists is a woman who did that logo. So like, I've had this wonderful, diverse team of creatives, and I could be that change that I want to see in the industry. So that was another impetus to do it myself, or at least a thing I could do if I did it myself and was something that encouraged me to do it myself.
Oh, totally. And honestly, that's not even the worst like timeline I've heard. Literally was just on a guest panel and Andrew Parks showed a prototype turned into a soon to be published game, and he's like, 16 years of my life. And I was like, damn, okay.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I can't imagine.
I don't want
so
to.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine, I guess. Because, yeah, it takes a lot of time sometimes.
God, it's so much years. That's like more than.
That's a lot of years. That's like a teenager. His game's a teenager.
I know. I was thinking, that's more than what I spent on school. Well, no, that's like exactly how many years I spent on schooling, I think. That's just insane to me.
That is wild. It feels like almost a whole lifetime kind of deal.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Well, that'll be a fully baked game.
Yeah. I hope it does well.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Oh my gosh. But no, that's so funny. And then, so on this game, I mean, you've already touched on a bunch of things that's like special about it, but you've also mentioned that now that people are starting to get it, they're starting to play these like classical songs, they're starting to look into these people a little bit farther. Is there anything else that you've like seen the game doing that you didn't expect now that you essentially have more playtesters now, like people are getting your game? How is it being received?
Well, I think it's a mix, but I think one of the things that was exciting to me is looking at the backers list and doing all the logistics is I feel like I've seen a lot of women's names. Kickstarter does tell us how many first-time Kickstarter backers, and I feel like, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but at the time I remember thinking that's really exciting to me, that there were a lot of people who believed in classical music and in a board game that were new and were willing to kickstart. So that's been really cool. Unexpected, I would say a friend of mine who's a New Zealander here and play tested it with me online, he just messaged me a rules question the other day, and I said, I can't believe this rules question has not come up, and I do not think I adequately answer it or word it in the rule book. So if there's a reprint, I'm gonna fix it.
And that's where the Q&A section on your website comes in. There you go. Right?
I was so blown away. And he says, yeah, well, my friends and I have been playing a lot of Ovation lately and really enjoying it, which was exciting to me because Kai has played a lot of Ovation already. And he didn't play the very, very first iteration, but the early days of the updated iteration what it is now. He's played quite a bit of it. So the fact that he's willing to play it with friends who are enjoying it now at his table is pretty amazing. Yeah, like I said, there was that email. I didn't mention their ages, but the mom, I believe, was 70 and the grandma was 90 or something. They were older players, which was really exciting to me that it would be approachable to a wide range of ages. One of the things I have noticed when I've played with friends or been at conventions and stuff is that boys, teen boys, which is what my son is now compared to when he started, but really love the combos and stuff. So that was pretty cool that boys just loved, although I've seen girls really enjoy it too. Like I said, there's a lot of women's names on the backers list, which excites me as a woman in gaming who thinks we really matter. We are part of the scene. We may not have been as visible as we could be in the past, but we are very important. So I love seeing that. So that's been exciting. Any other surprises? One of the surprises that was really neat to me was one of the backers pointed out that the player boards themselves are positive for accessibility. I didn't realize the dual layer boards would be helpful for a visually impaired person to be able to feel and use the tokens in the player board. So I did that for, you know, quality of life for the tokens so they don't move around and because they look beautiful. But now I'm even more excited that they have this accessibility bonus. So being successful with accessibility, and I've heard back from people who have either visually impaired players or colorblind players that the efforts I made have worked. So that was really, that's the player board was a surprise, but the whole of that is really gratifying and rewarding to know that if we pay attention to those details, we can make a difference for accessibility for more gamers.
Oh, totally. I remember that happening with like Her Story, me pushing to have, because we were debating like, do we do the resources in our hands or do we just put it immediately on the like on the board? But it's like, oh, but we solved some issues such as like my aunt before she passed away, she'd had like a stroke, wasn't able to move things and stuff with her hands and like hold stuff for long periods of time. It was very difficult, but like she could have played Her Story because all it would take is just that one movement to move the token onto the board and like turn it in versus like holding a hand of cards. And we had a lot of people comment like, hey, we love this game for this reason because like it makes it more accessible to us. Like we have shaky hands or we can't really do much of this like motion. And that like made me really happy to see that. And it also made it more accessible to like younger ages too, because you were able to just like look over at like your little cousin or your brother or whatever they're doing and just be like, hey, like maybe do this instead. Or like, oh yeah, no, look, you have exact, actually look at these symbols here. So it was like kind of nice. So you could like help guide people where you're not like, oh, here, can I show you my cards and ask you this question kind of deal?
Yeah. Yeah. Ovation has information, open information like that too. And I didn't even think about that, but that's wonderful. And what a great story about Her Story.
Yeah, right. Do-do-do-ch.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, then for like the design itself, did you have a favorite and a least favorite part of the experience?
The least favorite is pretty easy. I had a bad experience with one of the digital spaces. I mean, there's a way that we can give each other feedback that is constructive. And there are ways that aren't. And I had a couple of bad experiences in that one scene. And one of them, that last one definitely was the one that was saying, who cares about these people that nobody's heard of?
Like, well, who cares about you? I'm just kidding.
Right. And nobody's going to want to play these people. Although it was funny because they included Haydn in that list.
Oh.
And I was like, there are a lot of people that in the classical music world that know who he is. So I feel okay about that.
Even I know who that is. So like, and I am not that person, but I did have a tendency to date those people. So,
but it really felt dismissive of Mariana Martinez and Joseph Bologne in particular. And so that was a pretty rough experience. And that has been more than made up for by the people who have said to me, hey, even playtesters who've said, I still listen to Joseph Bologne since you introduced me to him. And that just rocks my world. So I'm like, I can forget that particularly least favorite experience. Favorite experience is tough, but it might be, oh gosh, there have been so many lovely ones. It's hard to pick one. The one where I felt like it was ready, because do you ever feel like it's ready? There's that whole question of, is it ready? Might have been at the Game Artisans of New Zealand. It was complicated. There was a retreat, and then it had to get change of venue. So it was kind of a more casual gathering. It was Shem Phillips and Sam McDonald and Paul Abrams. Paul Abrams is one of the designers of Regicide and Andy. And Paul loved Ovation because he played it before. And he just shouts, I must play my magnum opus. And he's running around. And he's just a kick. And he's like, yes, we got to play Ovation. We got to play Ovation. And Sam and Shem hadn't played it yet. And Andy hadn't played it yet. So they all played Ovation. And it was so much fun to watch them engaging in the play and stuff. I was just giggling because they were golf clapping each other. But with a four-player game, you can't attend everybody's performance. You have to only go to your neighbors. So then they would complain that you're too far away. I can't go. Like, they get really upset. Or boo, it was terrible because I couldn't go. You know. And so they were just really having fun with it. And then at the end, I had my notebook out. I'm like, okay, I'm ready. Tell me everything I need to fix. And what happened was they told me the things they liked about it. And I didn't write a thing. I didn't end up writing anything down. I probably should have, because sometimes you need those boosts. But as I'm realizing now, now that reviews are coming.
You are awesome. Underline, underline.
Underline, underline, yeah. Yeah, now that reviews are coming, now that people are rating it, it's like sometimes those little things hit your heart and you go, oh, ow. But then the other ones go. So I have just had a suggestion to make a notebook or something that's got those documents, something that's got those reassuring things. I might write about that story in there, because that was really when they would know. They would know if it was broken. They would tell me if it was broken, you know. And they were just really, really great. Here's one of the things I really liked about this game. Here's another one. So yeah, that was great. And then there was a gentleman that came up and explained his glasses, because they were kind of colored glasses. And he said, well, let me explain. I wear these because I'm colorblind. I said, oh, this is wonderful. I really tried hard to make it colorblind friendly. And so you're going to be so valuable as a playtester. I mean, everybody's valuable, but this is so important. And he whipped off the glasses and he went, let's give it a go. And he just let me grill him at every point. And, you know, okay, were you able to see that? Was that, did you have to pause? And then he just pointed out things that were working, and it was great. So there's so many little stories like that.
Oh, that's so cool. You should do what I do. So I will actually take screenshots. Like if someone sends me a cute text or like a nice message on Facebook or email, I actually take screenshots, and then I have a folder called Feel Good. And so any day I'm having an off day, I'll like look at my little Feel Good folder.
This is brilliant. And I'm doing this.
Please, please take from me, because some days we need that.
Yes, I think as creatives, even more so, because so much of what we do is us, and we are what we do, kind of thing, that it's just so intrinsically connected that if someone doesn't love it, it almost feels like they don't love you, you know? So it's like, yeah, it's hard to disconnect from that sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of scary though, because I do have a lot of friends that go through like, my self-worth is the products I'm putting out. Like, I'm only as good as my next thing. And I've been trying to stop a lot of my friends from feeling that way, because I'm like, no, you are valued for the human you are right now, whether or not your game does well or whether or not you get like on the hot list of BGG or whatever. Like, that shouldn't matter. You're a good person. You made something you care about that you enjoy and that a large amount of people enjoy. Because let's be honest, the people who rate it a lot of times are more the angry people or the ones that are just like, I don't know. Like, I rarely rate things on BGG. And I definitely have never given something like a terrible score. Because like, unless I'm playing some game that I actually get shot in, I'm probably not going to give a 1 to any game ever. Like, unless it actually physically harms me.
Right. And just knowing what goes into creating a game, it's hard for me to imagine.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, not acknowledging the work. And then the fact that we know no game can be for every person. And so there are times, like I played Nucleum, which is hugely successful and very intelligently designed. And for whatever reason, my brain was not working with it. I was such a holdup for the whole game, and I lost terribly. And I don't mind that part at all. And I didn't mind the game. But at the end, people said, well, what did you think? And I said, I can't tell you because it didn't work in my brain. I would never dream of assessing this game's value as a game, or, you know, I can't even critique it intelligently because whatever, there was something misfiring. I want to try it again and see if it was just that day. But yeah, even I can tell when a game isn't for me. You know, if there's a bunch of, I build something up and somebody gets to knock it down a bunch, that's not going to be for me. But I would never couch that in the game is bad. Some people love that sort of, ha, I got you interaction. So I'm not going to knock it when somebody else might love it. So I don't know. But it's tough. It's tough. We know how much it can hurt, and we know how much work goes into it. And we know that no game can be for every person. So I agree with you. I'm not ever going to rate something really, really low like that. Not ever.
Well, then you've already mentioned Holiday Hijinks. What one? We don't know. But future project. Do you have any other future projects you want to like talk about or kind of sort of ish talk about?
Yeah, that cooperative word building game that Bez and I have worked on, we're calling it Questable. It's got the 50 different quest levels. So there's easy, moderate, tricky, fiendish, and diabolical levels. And so that's been a lot of fun to work on. A lot of work, as we talk about, because every mission is like, every quest is like a different little mini game. But I'm really, really proud of that one. And I have been working on a game called Apple Orchard that I do believe will be the next Looking Glass Workshop project. And it's sort of twist on trick taking, but it's moved away from trick taking quite a bit, so that that's actually almost a bidding mechanism. The trick is almost a bidding mechanism for when you draft an apple tree to take back to your orchard, and you can plant and graft different apple varieties into your orchard. And then there's a spatial puzzle and scoring mechanism with that. But also some market manipulation, because the paths are valued at how many of that kind of apple got thrown in the compost pile. And you can tinker with that throughout the game, so that you can make sure that if I went heavy on Granny Smith, that Granny Smith is worth more than the Honeycrisp or something. So that one I'm enjoying a lot. And that one's fun, because what happens is about the fourth or fifth trick in, people, the first time they play, they go, oh, and start to realize how the different things interact. And then I hear interesting a lot. So I think that's good. You know, interesting is tricky, because that could go either way.
Normally when I say it is good, so we're going to just assume that's the same. I also feel like, have I played like an old version of this? Because it sounds familiar.
You played an old version of it, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I was like, wait, why does this seem so familiar? And I was like, I've played a game also called Applejack, but it's not that one.
Yeah, no, we definitely did, because you were also working on The Inn.
Yeah, Innkeeper, right? My very first game that still has not come out, and I'm now about to hit 10 games. Blows my mind. Jesus.
Maybe that we don't want that one to be the 16 year one, right?
No, I mean, like, it's fine. That might end up being that.
But yeah, that's interesting, because that too has the sort of trick taking twist, right? Where you're getting to draft based on her.
So it's not trick taking anymore either. So yeah, I developed the trick taking out of it, funny enough, because yeah, nope, that's changed.
I never pitch Apple Orchard as a trick taker, because people who play trick taking games have a different set of expectations, but there are elements of it still that work that way. And I can do a shorthand in the teach that way, but I don't sell it as a trick taker, because then they go, well, this element's missing. Like, yes.
Fair enough. Yeah.
That's definitely been developed past that element.
I hate playing trick-taking games, but I keep putting the mechanics into things. Or at least
interesting.
Yeah. No, I have a trick-taking game coming out next year with Pandasaurus Games called Tricky Kids. And that one was, I hate getting stuck with stupid numbers. So now you get to write your own numbers and feel stupid. So it's your own fault if you write it wrong.
Awesome.
I'm very excited for that one.
What's that one called? Are you allowed to say?
Oh, it's called Tricky Kids. You're playing as like kids around the playground or whatever, like making up numbers on your cards in order to win tricks.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
It is very, it's very interesting. And I'm going to say that is as much as I'll say, because the mechanics of how it works is like very cool. It's definitely one of the games that I'm very, very proud of, because it's not been done before. And I feel like it's really hard to do things like that. I'm very pumped. I actually think that's the first time I've talked about it on this podcast, weirdly enough.
Yay!
Yay! You're special. You got out of me.
Yes, keep an eye out for tricky kids. I will, because I love tricky ticking.
Sweet. Awesome. All right. Well, for my last question, completely unrelated to your game, I would love to know, if you could have designed a game you didn't actually design, which one would you have wished it was?
This is tough, because I thought I was going to say one thing, but now I think I want to say something else inspired by what we were just talking about. Because there are plenty of brilliant games to say, oh, I wish I had done that, or I wish I'd been that clever, or gosh, that's brilliant. But I'm gonna give some love, because I've been playing it a lot lately and introducing it to people who also love it. And I'm gonna give some love to Inside Job, which is a trick-taking social deduction game. Now wait, before you go, what? I'm not a huge social deduction person, although I've been playing a lot of Blood on the Clock Tower. But I like deduction more than I like social deduction, I'd say. And I do really like trick taking. And what's brilliant about this is I played it with people who will say, oh, I'm not that good at the social deduction part. But it's so interesting because of the mechanics where you're playing the game. And so that kind of reveals itself. You reveal yourself as potentially a traitor or the insider by the trick taking that you have to play. But then based on just trick taking, like, you're trying to achieve a goal and you may not be able to play to that even when you want to, because you're following trick taking rules. So it's just ingenious how it makes people look suspicious, but it does the best of what trick taking games do. And it's got this great deduction element that is just fun. And everybody always wants to play it again and again and again and add more roles in. And it's just so smart. I just admire Tanner so much for coming up with that game. And it's been hitting with everybody I've introduced it to, just without fail. And I'm so glad it's produced. I'm so glad it's available. And I just love it. And I wish I'd been that clever.
You'll be that clever in a different way.
Hopefully. And I get to play test games with Tanner. So I get to learn and watch him too. And I'll play test with, I haven't got to play test with you in ages, but I got to learn and watch you as well. And it just, we learn from each other.
Oh, I'm so much better now. You should totally test with me now. I didn't know what I was doing back when we did that in 2020. That's like when I first was starting. That's crazy. Yeah, I've grown a lot.
Well, I think we all learn from each other, don't we? I don't know. Even when we're starting out, we're learning from each other.
No, that's very true. But oh my God, that's so crazy to me. All right. Well, you know, for everyone who's been listening to all these fun flashbacks and laughters, thank you for joining us for this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 101, Ovation. And thank you so much again. It was super fun with all the laughs. Kirsten, it was great to have you. And for anyone who's trying to find you online or find your game, where can you be found?
Yes, I am Looking Glass Workshop. So lookingglassworkshop.com. And then in the socials, I'm Looking Glass WS, so you don't have to type out all the way to workshop. So Looking Glass WS on Blue Sky and Instagram and the Book of Face and all that stuff.
Perfect. And you can find me, Danielle Reynolds, on social media, and that's under X, Blue Sky, and Instagram under Token Gamer, and that's GAYMER. Thank you so much for being on the show. This was super fun.
Thank you. It was so much fun to talk to you again, Danielle.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out NoDirectionPodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at Let'sAllPlay.com. Join us next time.